Our episodes contain graphic information and at times strong language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Would you like some murder with your coffee?
Welcome to Morning Murders! I'm Nicole.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Brenna. We're just three gals who like to sit around, drink coffee, and talk about true crime.
Yep. They say that about us. That's what they
crime. Say. Yep. And they said it about
How
us.
Many U's are in that?
Ooh.
Is it more U's or O's?
Yep.
Do you speak whale?
Just only a little bit. Only a tiny bit. I minored in whale in college.
Oh, smart.
But yeah, we are just three gals, and we drink coffee, we talk about true crime, and true blue whale crime.
Whoa.
Whale crime?
Oh, gosh.
Nicole, did you bring a whale crime?
I didn't bring a whale crime.
A whale of a crime.
I don't think I could.
Oh.
But I got it. Well, that's maybe why you're that. A writer.
That's a whale, of,
a whale of a crime.
A whale of a crime.
Yeah, actually, ladies and beans, the case that I bring to the Breakfast Nook is from a bean recommendation.
Holy.
Yeah. So shout out to Tex Bailey for this one. And this is one that I had to brew many pots of coffee while researching. Ladies and beans, have you ever heard of the Claremont Killer?
I mean, I have heard Claremont. Refresh my brain.
So when I actually went to look it up, I got two different things that popped up. But she linked me a Wikipedia, so I like knew exactly which one I was looking for. So this
there's
actually
multiple.
Well, there's another person that kind of got dubbed this because it's another place that's also called Claremont.
Fair. It's
so
like
that's
how there's the Night Stalker, the original Night Stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So this one takes Claremont. Us back over to Australia.
Oh, no. Oh,
okay. Yeah, Arner. This time we're actually going to an area called Perth, which I know a little bit about because my partner did a tour of, like, music and was in Perth. Mm-hmm. This case ran cold for 25 years until DNA lent a helping hand.
Hell yeah, DNA.
Yeah. The Western Australian Police, the WA for short, so I might end up saying WA throughout. Western Australia Police. So they kept every piece of evidence they found on this case, and finally science caught up to where it needed to be to put the very dangerous predator away. What will turn into a 7-month trial in 2020 all started with the disappearance of Sarah Spears, an 18-year-old secretary who disappeared on January 27th, 1996. Any of it sound familiar, Amanda?
It's getting familiar.
Okay, right. Her father described her as a bubbly girl who had an aura about her that would light up a room. She would make everyone around her feel good. And when she disappeared, her parents, Don and Carol, came from Darkin, to help with the search. Sarah had been dancing at a nightclub in Claremont the night that she disappeared. So documentary I watched on this, which I linked in the show notes, was an ABC News in-depth called Catching the Claremont Killer, Why No Body Means No Justice for One Family. Spoiler. An Australian story. It showed footage from the various years of interviews, which was really interesting. One was Sarah's father, and it showed him and his wife in 1996 on the news, then him in an interview in 2004 talking about how he kept sitting in the living room waiting for her to walk in the door, but knowing deep down that it just wasn't going to happen. And then it showed him again in 2019 or 2020 talking about how he basically cried himself to sleep for the last 12 months that Sarah had been missing. But what was amazing is how they told that story, because they, in one go, like within a span of a couple minutes, I saw him in 96, in 2004, and then in like 2019, 2020.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really powerful to see the footage that way, because it really made you feel how much time passed for these families.
Right.
And it was just a few seconds. It was wild to watch that. I had actually rewound it and watched it a couple times. So 4.5 months later, Jane Rimmer went missing. She was a 23-year-old childcare worker when she went missing. She was described as bubbly and a lovely girl to be around. Police came to the family's house when she didn't come home after a night out in Claremont, and they said that they feared she had disappeared in a similar way that Sarah did. The family at first was like, no, she's a fighter. It's not the same. But then more time passed, and they started to fear the worst. They made flyers, hung them all around until weeks later, a body was found. The police went back to the family house, and the family instantly knew it wasn't going to be good news. They had identified the body as Jane Rimmer. Her parents, Jenny and Trevor, are also shown in the documentary in 2004, and then again in 2019, 2020. Her father, Trevor, already had some health issues, and her mother hinted at that, like, early on. And then after Jane's death, Jane's sister, Lee, said that he always looked heartbroken until the day he died. Mm. So he died shortly after her death. Macro was a task force that got created after the two women disappeared. Then a third woman went missing in March of 1997. Now the police really fear that they were in fact dealing with a serial killer. So Kiera Glennon had been out celebrating St. Patrick's Day when she disappeared. She was 27 years old and said to be a fun-loving person who was also very serious about her career as a lawyer. Kiera, I had to write out how to say her name, make sure I didn't say it wrong. Kiera and Jane's bodies were both found to have a lot of similarities as for cause of death and how they were left. Both had neck injuries that forensics said was caused by a sharp force instrument like a knife. They had been stabbed repeatedly in the neck, and then their bodies were covered with branches found on the ground and, like, the surrounding trees. And the bodies were found by chance weeks later after the weather and other variables damaged vital evidence. So this person didn't take time to actually bury them. They just kind of laid them out so anyone could find them and just covered them with branches. The macro task force gets a breakthrough. And on a Sunday morning at, like, 3 a.m, they went to get their suspect. His name was Lance Williams, and he became the prime suspect for the police. He was driving around in the area and was showing very strange and sexually motivated behavior, they said. The police began keeping an eye on him, setting up surveillance everywhere. The media straight up approached him. It's in the documentary. They went up to him.
Damn.
Yeah, and it looked like
media ruins everything.
Well, so it looked like maybe they'd even just interviewed him by the police, like, as he was walking out from an interview, and they're like, are you a serial killer? First of all, come on, guy. Like, he's gonna say, yeah, I'm a serial killer,
who,
media.
Me? Yeah.
Me? Yeah.
I murdered that Special K this morning.
Yay. Hey. I watched them do it. I'm like, why would you go up? Are you a serial killer? No, media. Come on. Get your questions better.
Oh, you got me.
You got me.
This is the third time I was
asked. That's the rule. If you say it, I gotta admit to it.
Yeah, if you're a cop, you gotta tell me. That's not true. Don't believe
that. That's not true. Yeah. You don't have to say you're a cop if you're a cop.
Cops are allowed to lie.
So, Lee, again, that's Jane's sister, had a friend who was cousins with Lance. And Lee would ask them, are the police still harassing Lance? And her friend would say stuff like, oh, yeah, but he'd never do anything like that, you know. He was just trying to protect women or warn them. And Lee believed her. She thought her friend had no reason to lie about any of that. The police, however, did not believe that. They zoned in on Lance Williams, determined to catch him and put a stop to the killings. Ladies and beans, tunnel vision is a very real and very dangerous thing that can happen.
I was just about to ask.
Especially in murder investigations. It is so important to keep an open mind and let the evidence guide instead of just trying to force what you believe to be true. I've seen countless interviews of detectives talk about this and how tunnel vision is very real and it happens, and you have to constantly remind yourself to take a step back and really look at what's being presented to you. The fact that they were so desperate to put an end to all of this fear, which comes from a good place. I mean, they were trying to do a good thing, but unfortunately, the good intentions were used in the wrong way. Because of this, the investigation went off the rails, leading it to become one of the longest-running and most expensive murder investigations. 8 years went by, and they still were no closer to closing the case. They had to start fresh. The macro task force didn't think they needed help back then, but now they saw the value in asking for help. So a team of 5 experts, 2 men from Australia, a woman from the U.S., and 2 men from the U.K. joined the investigation. They were tasked with going through every bit of material and information gathered by the Marco task macro. I keep saying Marco. By the macro. I know. That's why I'm doing it. The macro task force. And see if there were any fresh leads that they could find. They started talking about fingernails and fibers. The team now had access to more resources, too. The woman on the team was from Seattle, and she was a forensic psychologist. She really helped in creating a profile for the offender. She said that there was no way the murderer... She said that there was no way the murders were the offender's first offenses. Why did I write the sentence like that? Gave myself a tongue twister. She said that there was no way the murders were the offender's first offenses. There had to be a history and a progression of escalation. They needed to link these three cases with previous cases to try to gather more evidence to identify the offender. The macro task force was ended, and the special crime squad was created. It was about 4 years before the team would get the breakthrough they needed. In mid-2008, two sergeants decided to venture to the forensic evidence records and re-examine them. 4,000 of the exhibits had not been tested yet. One in particular ended up being a pretty incredible chain of events. It was a scraping of Kiara's left thumbnail. It had been recovered in her, during her autopsy. Like, when they were doing it, they decided to keep all the things, which was great.
Of course, yeah.
Because a forensic science had now made wonderful advances, and thankfully the evidence was stored safely. So DNA was kept intact, and they were able to send it to UK's Forensic Science Service to be tested.
Nice, because that's usually, like, we hear a lot, like, on all these documentaries we watch and things that we listen to where it's, like, things got lost or, you know, it was stored improperly in some wet basement or something,
And then it all got lost.
Mm-hmm.
So one sample that came back was Kiara Glennon's, and the other was an unknown male. It was the first time in years, like 12 years or something at this point, that they discovered a direct link between one victim and her murderer.
Mm.
Then they fucking matched that DNA to an unsolved rape case from 1995.
Wow.
A 17-year-old girl had been abducted while walking home late at night in Claremont by a man and thrown into his van. Her hands and feet were bound with cables. She was gagged and a hood was thrown over her head. And she was taken to Karakata Cemetery and brutally and repeatedly raped back in 1995, 16 months before Jane Rimmer was murdered. This young girl barely survived the attack, but she sure as shit survived. Not to get too far ahead of myself, but she does make appearance at the trial.
Yeah!
So now the WA police and the special crime squad are thinking they must be mere weeks away from catching the murderer. They took DNA swabs from previous suspects, and now they just needed to match it. And it will match one of them. Right? No. It will happen, but they have not found the correct suspect yet. So all the people they thought, none of them matched.
Mm.
They still needed to go back through like 30 or 40 years worth of material. There was so much evidence to be reexamined from previous cases and find more links. There was still a lot of work to do. It's like tens of thousands of exhibits just trying to find links to help break the case and solve, and hopefully other unsolved cases get solved too. 2015 comes and they're all out of ideas again. So a newspaper published a series of front page stories that shook the population a bit. The stories reveal that the murder of Kiara Glennon and the Karakata rape were connected by DNA. Because of that, the police started getting new resources. So because this newspaper was like, population, here's some stuff that's happened. No one's told you yet. Mm-hmm. This is what's going on. And because of that, they got a bunch of calls from people and, like, new resources opened up.
All right.
There was a series of crimes that had happened in Huntingdale, which was only about an hour away from Claremont, I guess. And back in the 1980s, there was another young girl who was attacked. In this case, the young girl was attacked in her own home. She was asleep and woke up when a man started sitting on her back.
Yikes.
He just put his hands around her mouth, but she managed to, like, struggle free and call out to her dad, who was in the next room. The dude jumped off the bed and, like, ran out. He left behind his cream-colored kimono, however, and it was, well-used.
Oh, no.
Which will provide great assistance in November 2016. The silk kimono had been stored in an exhibit box, and it was found. They, like, found it when they were going through stuff. They took the kimono out and tested it for DNA, and it matched.
Woo!
Wow. So now we're matching more things. So it has now linked Kiera Glennon to the Karakata rape victim, and the police now believe that that same perpetrator had committed the Huntingdale attack in 1988, the Karakata rape in 1995, and Kiera's murder in 1997. They still don't know who it was, though.
Right.
But they're getting these pieces. So they continued to investigate other crimes that had similarities in Huntingdale. There was another case where a man in a woman's nightgown opened a sliding door and left four fingerprints. This attempted break-in happened in 1988 as well. So fingerprints had been taken from the kimono attack and the attempted break-in, and they matched. Oh. So now they can link these two cases together.
Did the kimono match the nightgown, I wonder?
Well, they didn't have the nightgown wasn't part of evidence, but in the report, it was a man in a nightgown tried to open it. So they got the fingerprints, but the guy didn't leave anything else behind at the time. Ladies and beans.
But they could have been a matching set.
But they could. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
He's
I
wanted my robe back.
I just wanted to get my robe. I went to the wrong house. ladies and beans, grab your delicious and comforting coffee because here comes the murderer.
Twist.
Those fingerprints matched a man named Bradley Robert Edwards, born December 7th, 1968.
Three names.
I know. Always.
Can't fucking trust him. Names.
His fingerprints were in the database because of a crime he committed in 1990. Bradley worked as a Telstra technician. He worked on the phone lines at Hollywood Hospital, and one day, he attacked a social worker who'd been sitting at her desk. He gagged her and dragged her across the room.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. And she put up a fight. She kicked really hard and as hard as she could, and he let her go and suddenly was like, oh, sorry. Yeah. So he went to... Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no, that's
no,
not...
No, 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 no.
That's not how that works.
Oops, I bumped into you violently over and over. No, no,
and then dragged you across the floor.
Yeah.
Oh.
So this is not an oopsie daisy.
No. So he went to court for that attack and pleaded guilty to the assault. He was given probation. He not only kept his job, but he later got a promotion.
Fuck that.
Uh-huh. So they still need to match the DNA from the kimono to Bradley. They got fingerprints, but the DNA is what they really need. The DNA was the only way to link it back to the other cases. The investigation now shifted to undercover officers who would follow Bradley. They followed him into a movie theater and sat behind him. Bradley drank from a Sprite bottle during the movie, and then he left it behind.
Oh.
Boom. The undercover officers took the bottle and were able to get DNA from it. And the DNA matched.
Oh, my God.
It sure did.
Bradley.
20 years later, they have him.
Wow.
I know. The suspect was now behind bars. The news of this was, like, huge, and it was a much needed, like, gift to Claremont. You know, people were crying from the relief of knowing that this guy got caught, because everyone was, like, living in fear, and, like, the families, like, everything was just so tense and sad and fearful, and now the guy was caught, and people literally crying. Like, it's on, like, on the news. People were just crying from relief knowing this guy got caught. It's incredible. Everyone finally felt safe. So the arrest was made. Now it was time to move to trial and conviction. In the arrest video shown in court, Bradley is seen kneeling on the floor saying he couldn't believe why he was there. What were they talking about? All things like that. But by the time the interview video is shown, he's a bit more together. So it's like a video from him in his house and then a video from him in the police interrogation room. So he's a bit more together, but he's still denying everything. They produce his DNA to him in relation to the murders and attacks, and he still denies it. The police step outside of the room, and they left him alone in there for a bit. And you can get a sense that maybe he's starting to see the gravity situation. You, like, watch him on the video, and you can kind of see him, like, looking closer at stuff and kind of, like, sinking down. What was wild to everyone was how totally normal this dude was, though. He had a normal job, played on a football, soccer team, won community awards for his work with the local sports club, just living a very normal life in Plain Sight. He is described as a bit of a nerd, a bit of a geek maybe, a bit of a loner. One of the forensic consultants believed that maybe Bradley didn't do any attacks after Kiera because either he formed a stable relationship or Kiera frightened him so much that he stopped after her murder. It took years to get to trial, 2016 to 2019.
Woof.
They took that time to go back to the physical evidence. There were a lot of pieces and things that hadn't been, like, thoroughly investigated yet because they just collected a bunch. They collected everything they possibly could. So, but they still need to go through things. And there were some very important pieces that were yet to be discovered. There were fibers in Bradley's car and on his work clothes that they got that matched fibers found on Kiara Glennon and Jane Rimmer's bodies. Not only that, but it matched the clothing of the rape victim. There was no DNA with Jane, so the fibers were really important because they could link that with the case.
Mm.
Fibers aren't as strong in evidence, but they do still count for something.
Right.
A month before the trial, Bradley Edwards pleaded guilty to the charges against him relating to the Karakata. I might be saying this wrong, and I apologize, everybody in Australia, because it's K-A-R-R-A-K-A-T-T-A. Karakata.
It's like a
Yeah.
Like Karakata.
Like mid A.
Yeah.
It's not an A. Eh. It's not an A.
Karakata.
I don't know. Karakata. I'm just bullshitting here. I don't know anything.
Yeah. So if anyone in Australia or knows the place is like yelling every time that I say it and saying it correctly, know that I apologize and I'm trying to say it correctly. So that victim, as well as the Huntingdale attack, so he pleaded guilty to both of those attacks. He had been denying the 8 charges against him for 3 years at this point, and then suddenly he pleads guilty to those 2. In the court, the families of the 3 women, Sarah Spears, Jane Rimmer, and Sierra Glennon, are there, and the 2 surviving victims were also there. Bradley never once looked back at any of them during the trial. He also never spoke or went into the witness box. He never spoke about anything. He just sat there and, like, scribbled with a pencil on paper the whole trial. When it came time to read the verdicts on count 6, which was the willful murder of Sarah Spears, Bradley Edwards was found not guilty. In the case of Sarah Spears, no body was ever found. There was no physical evidence that linked Bradley to her disappearance and assumed murder. The family knew there was a chance that he would be found not guilty because of the fact that there was nothing solid linking him to her specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Her father said in his interview that the only relief he ever got came from the prosecutor and the people working on Sarah's case. He tried to see a counselor, but that never helped. In their hearts, they knew he was guilty, even if the verdict said otherwise. And the judge did say that Bradley was likely the killer, but the evidence could not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
Her father also said in his interview that it was disappointing, but that if he had been convicted, he might have had grounds for an appeal because of the lack of evidence. So he's glad that, like, they didn't have to go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
On count 7, which was the willful murder of Jane Rimmer, on or about June 9th, 1996, he was found guilty. On count count eight, which was the willful murder of Kiara Glennon, on or about March 15th, 1996, he was found guilty. Bradley Robert Edwards never showed any emotion or expression during the trial. He refused to see a psychiatrist or participate in a psychiatric report. Let's talk a little bit more about the trial, though. So, like I mentioned, it was a 7-month trial. It was the longest and the most expensive. There were hundreds of witnesses, thousands of exhibits, and an entire floor of the public prosecutor's offices were used to accommodate the huge volume of evidence that was collected. So the prosecutor, she argued Bradley should never be released from prison, wanted a non-parole order. She said, "This case is so serious, so rare, so exceptional that the maximum available sentence is appropriate." The defense, he argued against the non-parole order by saying the features of the killings were not unique to this type of case. If granted, Bradley would be the 2nd to receive a non-parole order. The other was Anthony Robert Harvey, who was a family murderer. On December 23rd, 2020, Bradley Edwards was officially sentenced to 20 years in prison before eligible for parole. Applause erupted in the courtroom after the sentencing was announced. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Hall said, "I recognize that there is a high likelihood that you will die in prison. You were a dangerous predator who sought out vulnerable women and attacked them for your own gratification. You targeted unsuspecting women who were usually completely unknown to you. Your actions were premeditated, executed with pitiless determination, and you were remorseless in your disregard for the pain and suffering that you caused. So this is the longest non-parole period ever granted. He also said, by your actions, you robbed the victims of their lives, their hopes, their dreams, and the dreams others had for them. For parents, the death of a child is always an unspeakable tragedy. To have a child taken and killed in the prime of their life is every parent's worst nightmare, and the effects are profound and long-lasting.
Beans! I wanted to take a moment to talk about a company that I love very much. It's called Adventure Dog Coffee Company. Not only do they offer a specialty-grade coffee that is roasted fresh to order, literally it is some of the best beans I've had the honor to brew for the Breakfast Nook, 20% of the proceeds from that coffee goes to train rescue dogs as specialty service dogs for veterans. To learn more about this incredible company and order your bag of coffee today, visit adventuredogcoffee.co. Use special promo code MURDER. That's M-U-R-D-E-R at checkout to receive a 20% discount just for being a bean. You can also check out their link in our show notes. Now, let's get back to the show.
Both of the survivors were at the hearing. Bradley was sentenced for both of their attacks and will serve them concurrently with the murder sentences. The women also spoke at the hearing. The woman from Huntingdale said, Bradley Edwards now features as the villain of my nightmares, and I can't make it stop. Her trauma has only intensified after his arrest. The woman who survived the vicious Caracatta Cemetery attack said, I hope you get treated as well in prison as you treated us. You are a despicable, pathetic coward who preyed on vulnerable young women who didn't stand a chance. You are no evil genius. You are unremarkable, who just slipped through the cracks. Victim impact family statements were only given by the Rimmer family in a letter that the prosecutor read Jennifer Rimmer's, who said she missed her daughter every day and wished that she could have become a mother herself. The Glennon family opted not to provide one because their suffering is beyond words, as the prosecutor put it. Police Commissioner Chris Dawson said, Edwards is a killer, a sadistic rapist who preyed on innocent women. He devastated families and tormented the West Australian community. The jailing of Edwards means the community is now safe from a terrible person. It is my sincere hope that Edwards will never be released from prison. The quest for Sarah will continue. He said that the WA police would never give up trying to solve Sarah Spears' murder and would continue to question Edwards about it. Lance Williams, the first suspect they just wouldn't leave alone at the beginning of all of this, was never publicly exonerated by the police.
Sucks.
He lived to see Bradley Edwards get arrested, but Lance died before the trial.
Damn.
The families all really came together and supported each other. The families of Jane and Kiara continue to support Sarah's family, and they all hold on to hope and the justice that Bradley Edward will never be able to torment or torture anyone ever again. Jane's family goes to her grave and celebrates her birthday every year. And I wanted to play something from Sarah's father, Don. The first bit is from 2004, then it switches to him in 2019 and 2020.
You want closure, and I guess that until the day that she is found, there'll never be closure. There's probably not an hour of any day that passes that I don't think of Sarah. Not a day, not an hour.
This situation's been devastating on my family. We've suffered it now for more than a third of our lives, Carol and I, and it's not going to end. It's not going to go away, and we will live with this for the rest of our lives. I feel that we've had part closure, yes, but I know that that torment will continue. Doesn't matter how hard you try to forget it, because we'll never forget it. You know, that was our lovely daughter, and we'll never forget that. Never, ever.
And that, ladies and beans, is the case recommended by our bean, Tex Bailey, the Claremont Killer. Any final sips?
Yeah.
Yeah, people who leave their garbage in a movie theater are garbage.
I mean, I'm and glad he did that.
Right, but that's how we knew he was a garbage human. We're oh, like, yeah, you know, yeah. I can count on you to not clean up your shit yeah. and just throw it away on your way out. You're mm-hmm. going to pass probably 4 trash cans, mm-hmm. but you are a trash can.
Yeah.
But you so I'm glad trash. We caught you, trash man.
Caught you, trash man.
Yeah, he was just a trash human, like, all around, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. people who prey on the weak are just trash humans.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those ones that makes me just scared to be a woman, because yeah. all these women ever did was just be a woman.
They just exist, yeah.
They're just existing. They didn't deserve any of that. That's horrible.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, clearly there is, like, it's a person that never figured out how to control themselves until, like, way after. I don't know, like, or if he was just gonna do it again. We have no idea about that either.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, an interesting thing about being, like, call the fighter and stuff like that, because I think I know that there's, and this is just an observation, there's no like mm-hmm. tinge or like leaning weight to any of this. It's just so interesting to me when it's like there's tons of people that fought and still yeah. like were taken or murdered or whatever. It's just, it's like a numbers game. It gets mm-hmm. to a certain point. It doesn't matter how well you know how to fight. Like, if you get hit in the back of the head with a brick, like, you can't throw a punch at anybody, like, kind of yeah. thing. Like,
yeah.
So it's so interesting how people. Clearly, like, it's interesting that he pled guilty to the ones where the people lived, right? Because yeah. he didn't want to be convicted of murder mm-hmm. yet, necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. So he clearly knew what he did was wrong after the fact.
Yep.
I feel like all those things take so much time. You have, like, so many seconds to stop to, like, make a different choice.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people double down instead and are like, well, I have to do this now because I started. It's like, no, you don't.
You really don't.
You really don't. You have to take a whole life. Stop. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did find it so interesting just how much time passed and, like, how that whole thing progressed. And
yay, DNA. Yay, science.
Yay, DNA. Yay, yeah. science. Yay to all those people who, like, just stored things the safest
the
way
correct
possible.
Way.
Yeah. Right. And even, like, not really knowing that at the time, right? Because we didn't even know what the future
to
was going to hold.
What we could
yeah.
do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they just fucking saved
just
everything.
About, yeah, saving everything.
And
is
that's
incredible.
So great because it's like, yeah, just save everything. Mm-hmm. Save everything. And it's just incredible that all those people involved in the case and the teams, the people they brought in, just incredible. And working together and helping each other, like pinging ideas off of each other and just trying to think outside of the box and just figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when she was like, we got to link them to other cases. This isn't the first offense. What a huge thing that was, because that brought them these other cases, which ended up getting his identification. Like, that's how they ID'd him
mm-hmm.
because of these cases, because she was like, this can't be the first thing he's done.
Sometimes
there's gonna be something else.
Yeah, sometimes you have to bring in, like, a fresh set of eyes to, like, mm-hmm. wake it all up again.
Yeah. Yeah, just incredible. All those, all the people on those teams, the police, the forensic scientists, everybody, and the families, because they were always supporting each other too,
mm-hmm.
and the community supporting each other. Just incredible.
So nice when it all works, because
yeah.
we hear so many times about how it doesn't or things are, like, left or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This makes me think about, I wonder if people knew him and had suspicions of him just in
mm-hmm.
general, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think about that one case in Ireland where it was, like, a French woman that was murdered in a town where, like, everyone pretty much knew who did it. And they're like, yeah, he probably did it. But he couldn't get extradited to, like, France or something. So they just, like, they convicted him of it in, like, France, of,
uh-huh.
like, murdering this woman. But he's, like, not being extradited out there. So he just lives in this village with everybody. And everyone's like, yeah, we know, like, he's a weirdo. We know he did
it. Oh, man. That's crazy.
It's just so interesting to me. I wonder, because of, like, these small towns or whatever, you know, where you're like, I know, yeah, we kind of probably know.
Crazy old Maurice.
Yeah,
right.
Crazy old Maurice. So I wonder if there were people that were like, yeah, this guy is a fucking creepo, or, you know, like, even if he was quiet or whatever, we don't know how he was, like, with everybody in his life.
Yeah, well, like, I have, like, pictures and stuff, too, but he was, like, pretty active on teams, like, but nothing crazy special. Like the girl said,
just
unremarkable,
normal, yeah.
just normal, boring dude. But, like, and that's so scary because he did
people
all these
can be everywhere.
Things.
Yeah, because we all assume that it's all going to be some, like, terrifying monster person when it's always just some random, normal, like, person. So that's why it's, like, important to just, you know, yes, anything can happen at any time, but, you know, try to just, I'm not saying don't trust anybody, but just don't leave out the opportunity that, like, some random person you don't really know is, like, not going to try to fuck with you.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about that before. The bad guys don't look like we're taught the bad guys look like, you know? They can look like anyone and anything. So, yeah.
In fact, the more normal they look, the more they want to, like, sneak, like, hide in the background. Yeah.
Dexter's like a good guy, bad guy.
Dexter's
a good guy, bad guy.
Another thing that I think about is it's like an interesting concept of like I've thought about this a few times and I think I'm just trying to offer a thought experiment, not really trying to like, I don't know. Okay. The idea that someone or you or a family cannot rest until remains are found. When, like, we choose sometimes to put remains, like, powder into, like, rivers and, like, or, like, you know, like, dead body. I understand why. There's a whole history behind it. I totally understand why we do it and why we've been conditioned to do that and stuff and, like, why it is important to, like, bury your dead and all that stuff. There's, I think, even, like, Buddhist traditions where you have to, like, take everything with you that you are, that's with your body. So some of them even take, like, fingernails and stuff, like you don't throw stuff out or whatever, you like keep it all because it comes with you to when you die. There's so many death practices out there, we've done whole episodes on it, right? So it's just so interesting to me that like it all returns to the planet that we are on and it is returned and over and done with, like whatever, however the means are done, like whatever that is. It's just interesting to me that in crime sometimes we like make it very important law enforcement to find the body, but then also it becomes very important for the family also, just in general, when it's just going to be done in another, like, made-up geographical location on, like, the planet. And I know why, but, you know, I get why. It's just so, it's an interesting idea to me that's, like, I've had the zoom-out thoughts about that recently, where it's, like, just with conflict on the planet, you're like, it's all one planet, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and it's more about, like, the closure. The now I know for sure that this is what it
and
is.
And I won't know unless I see the body or whatever.
Yeah.
But what if they're gone? What if it's, like, a fire and the house happens and then, like, everyone's dust? You know what I'm saying? Like, or you don't get to see. There's, like, that's part of, I think there is that fun,
you,
morbid.
Are you saying you can still have closure without the body?
I think, no, I'm saying it's just interesting. Like, it's just so interesting to me that, like, that's a thing that we as creatures, like, need when it doesn't make a tangible difference. It just makes an inside of your heart difference. Like, it's just so funny that we all, that when I've had family pass, I've had other family go, like, I need to see it. Like, they need to see them in the hospital room. Like, and it's like a Grey's Anatomy moment of, like, pushing past while One Tree Hill is playing in the back, you know, like, where did I go wrong? And you're like, Spessin, I gotta see it. You know, it's like, it's just an interesting thing that it's even a trope in, like, written stuff. It's such a ritual of our creaturehood.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a lot about that, the closure and what your brain does, where you're like, well, I haven't, you know, seeing is believing is seeing, that whole idea of, like, maybe there's a chance that they're still alive, even though you know in your heart that that might not be true. You cannot let it go until you see the body, because your brain, like, but what if? That's all the what ifs, right? Which is just so sad.
Because sometimes there isn't a body.
Because sometimes there isn't. And sometimes, like, you know, things do happen and you can connect the dot that they were in, you know, when you were talking about the fire, like, that we know that they were in there, even though we can't find the body, versus an abduction where it's like, we don't know what happened to them. Yeah.
And I know that, like, there's some animals that do that, too. Like, have elephants have funerals or, you know, all that kind of stuff as well. Like, well, that's, like, we attach that to that because we made up funerals. They didn't. Like, you know, so we attach that to that value, right? But yeah, it was just an interesting thought. I've had that thought a bunch of times where families are, like, so wrecked on a thing, like, forever because they didn't see the body, even though, like, even sometimes time passes, there is no body to see anymore, like, mm-hmm. just with decomposition of anything, right? Mm-hmm. So it is just, it is an interesting, like, terrible thing that our brains do mm-hmm. to us. Because it doesn't help anything. It just makes you sad.
It doesn't help anything.
No, it just makes you sad, but it's funny that that's what our brains just do. It's like, mm-hmm. I gotta see it.
Yeah.
Can't have closure until I see it. It's like, they're not gonna come back because you see them.
Yeah.
And then there's that written, because it's a thing that's written to and very romanticized, like even in Hill House, where it's like, you see them, you have dreams about them in an awful way because you didn't see it happen, so your brain just imagines the worst case scenario, and like usually seeing it in person is not as bad, or like whatever. Like mm-hmm. That's a lot of writing stuff is about that kind of stuff with death too. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Death is scary and interesting.
Yeah. But I don't know. What I have hope for with this story in general, like, or just like going back to it, is if he was somebody that just dragged them a little bit away. It's so crazy how that happens so often, where mm-hmm. the body wasn't that far. It just, you only have so much manpower and like visual power to see these things when like you see the remains mm-hmm. and stuff like that, or go like with some UK stories, they'll literally be like in the grass, like crawling on their hands and knees, mm-hmm. like, you know. So it's so interesting how they could just be like a few more kilometers away, like they were not that far, it was this far away.
And the fact that like he didn't take too much time to bury anything, right? So they were left to the elements, so who knows like what else happened that made whatever change, and then, you know, that's why we can't find her body.
Like an animal, like if he only carried her so far away, mm-hmm. right? Because he didn't seem to really give a shit where the bodies were going, which was so obnoxious, like just leaving them kind of out of the way, but still they would take them a minute to find those bodies even. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my only hope is that like she's somewhere, like it will be some random happenstance of like cities growing, because that's what happened out here. Mm-hmm. Cities growing, so then people are walking in areas that just aren't as super populated for whatever reason, and then they're mm-hmm. like, oh my god, you know, coming upon remains or something.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, like with that tunnel vision too, even when you're searching, you can get so focused on a certain type of thing you're looking for that you overlook something, and then later down the line you re-examine that same area and you find it, mm-hmm. you know.
So interesting. Well, I hope that just some rant, like, it sucks that they had to wait that long to like not get like remains, because it's like, mm-hmm. even if he was made guilty of that murder, the result of the interview, that the audio that you sent us would have been the same audio, right? Yeah. Like it wouldn't matter. He still hasn't been like, these are her remains because I want her home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very least, like they could have gotten something. But their case helped all the other people, right?
Yes. And couldn't he at this point say, because he's already been tried for her murder and he's innocent or whatever, right? So then couldn't he technically give them where her body is because he can't be retried? Or would that now become a different case?
I don't know how Australia works.
Right.
But yeah, right? Double jeopardy over there.
Because at this point, I'm like, just fucking tell the family so they can have, like you said, that closure.
Just something. If they need it, give it to them. Mm-hmm. Like, Jesus, you know.
Or they can at least do the DNA and been like, yes, he absolutely, without a doubt now, was the killer, even if we can't do anything to him legally. But he's already going to die in prison, so
yeah.
At least now we know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Just something. Or at least, like, something where they have more dates, like, more information about where he was, like, around that time. Because mm-hmm. then something, even if he doesn't give them where her body is, if they could, like, somebody...
Get closer.
Something, yeah, mm-hmm. just to find a area where she could be in.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? It's Australia. I'm sure, like, a spider carried her off or some shit. Like,
giant
like,
spider.
I wouldn't even be surprised.
Yeah.
Speaking of the elements out there.
I know. He was like, yeah, I don't need to. The kangaroo will take him away. Ah, Australia.
I can drop
bears. I do
want
to go. I have hope just because, you know, the families have all come together and really supported each other. And to my understanding, are still doing that. And, like, in the darkness, that is a really beautiful thing to happen. And kind of honoring all the girls,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is just really beautiful. But I do hope that something is found They're going to keep, the police say that they're going to keep looking. It's, she's still there. And I know that they revisit stuff, you know, as often as they can. So hopefully, maybe we'll have an update case one of these days and we'll talk about how she was found.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw.
Amen.
So, yeah. Thank you so much for bringing this recommendation into our Instagram messages. So, friends, we're on Instagram. Give us a check us out. Send us messages. We love hearing stories that you want to hear on here. So, reach out to us and tell us about things that are terrible over coffee.
And you can hear them next time.
And you can hear more next time on
and
this.
And all times.
And all times on. On this podcast that we like to call
Morning Moodles.
Snakes! Snakes!
Snakes!
Snakes! Snakes! Why is it gotta be snakes?
It's gotta be snakes.
Thank you for listening to Morning Murders.
Keep checking our page for new episodes and special guests.
Want to learn more? Swing by our Instagram to check out more information from our episodes at Morning Murders. That's MourningMurders.
Also, you can always check out some mental health links and our episodes resources in our show notes.
If you enjoyed listening to our highly caffeinated conversation, please leave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends.
If you have any stories you'd like to hear discussed around the Breakfast Nook, email us at morningmurders@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening!
I watched this episode. So Ewu is one of those true crime things I watch on YouTube, and they do police interrogation. Like, they take it apart with, like, a crew of people and, like, talk about, like, why people do certain things and what they're doing and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. They cover a lot of, like, they'll cover, like, teen stand-ups. Crime people that, like...
I feel like we've seen a couple.
I've shown you guys a couple. There's this one that I just watched today that... If I'm giving a personal opinion, I don't know if this is going to go into anything extra. It's fine if it's recorded. I'm just saying, this woman fucking killed this little boy, and her mom took the fall. And it is so blatantly clear, and, like, the lady is so, like, she doesn't even call him by his name. She calls him the boy and the nephew. She, like, when she calls 911, it was so wild, and her mom takes the fall, and, like, you can tell her sister's like, mom, like, her mom kind of has dementia, so I think that this daughter convinced her mom that she killed the four-year, like, drowned him.
Oh, my God.
Like, it is so fucked up, and this lady's just free roaming around. She has two kids of her own, and they even interview her and pick apart her fucking interview. They interview her directly, like, nowadays, and they, like, were cross-posting, like, because they have her interview. So the guy, I don't know if anything could happen, but it would be so fucking great if, like, somebody watches that and goes, oh, yeah, hold on a second, like, because, like, literally, they're, like, she's, like, it was 3 a.m. They're, like, you said it was 7. Like, they're literally, like, showing the fucking video of, like, her with, like, their interrogation from, like, 10 years ago. It is wild.
Wow.
That lady did it. Like, I don't, you know what? It's one of those Casey Anthony things where I'm, like, you know what? You did it. And I'm not a judge. Like, I can say that because I have no fucking, I'm not sentencing you to prison.
Right.
I can have the opinion. Girl, you did it. Girl, Sam, you did it, because she even said that she did it and then, like, took it back, and then, like, her mom, yeah, it was,
yeah.
I feel like I did it, and, like, she literally, they're like, did you do it? Like, it was so confusing. You tell, like, the officers are like, okay, your mom said that she did it, and then, like, but then everyone keeps asking her what happened. She said she doesn't remember, that she just snapped and that she just did it, and, like, what? It's so crazy.
Oh, man.
It was so crazy. I was like, this woman just got, literally, it's just a lady that got away with killing a little boy.
Oh, my God.
And it's just walking around in her life.
Fuck that.
Dude.
Craziness.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Amanda. Amanda. Amanda.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Bring it back.
Bringing back the Manduck.
Manduck, Nicole, Brenna.
Is that not how you do auctioneer? I just assumed I was an auctioneer.
I think you just got a job.
Yeah, you are now an auctioneer. Congratulations. Nailed it. This is my audition tape. My auctioneer career, guys.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to audition for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
Life is an audition for death.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Sorry.
Album name.
You know, I think we all get the part.
Album name.
Yeah, you were born to play, audition for death. You were born to play, baby.
Nicole and I both looked at Amanda at the same time and said, like, what? Not because you said something weird, but because we both realized. Yeah,
I was just over here talking about myself.
You heard me being in one of you was following my voice, and you heard me. We're friends.
We're friends.
Fuck these guys.
Fuck these guys.
All right. Oh, man, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I wanted to make a noise first. That was my noise.
Get it out of this.
And so the case, a case ran cold.
Go and get it, you silly goose. You goose, it's silly. Silliest goose, silliest goose. You're the silliest goose in the whole wide world. Honk.
Honk.
Silly goose is coming to town.
Honk.
Why don't you just go honk about it then?
Honk about it.
Oh my gosh. How can I help? I'm stuck. Oh no, I'm stuck. Oh god. Okay. Oh, there she goes.
Oh,
I need to
clap for me.
Oh god.
Oh god.
There she goes.
Oh, there I go.
There she goes.